Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck. Or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge. Upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
What Came Next is intended for mature audiences only. Episodes discuss topics that can be triggering, such as emotional, physical, and sexual violence, animal abuse, suicide, and murder. I am not a therapist, nor am I a doctor. If you're in need of support, please visit somethingwaswrong.com/resources for a list of nonprofit organizations that can help. Opinions expressed by my guests on the show are their own and do not necessarily represent the views of myself or Broken Cycle Media. Resources and source material are linked in the episode notes. Thank you so much for listening. Lisa Phillips is a model, actress, survivor, and victim advocate who has spent much of her life all over the world. While cultivating a career in the modeling and acting industries, Lisa even found herself overseas and as a guest on Jeffrey Epstein's private island. That specific trip would become quite traumatic for Lisa, and although she would never return to the property again, she would soon be trafficked into a vast and widespread ring that enabled mass sexual assault. It wouldn't be until after navigating the legal system and sharing her story with other survivors of the same serial abuser that Lisa truly was confronted by the depth of her trauma. The Broken Cycle Media team is so grateful Lisa was willing to share all that came next for her in her healing process and in creating her beautiful podcast community entitled From Now On.
My name is Lisa Phillips. I think that people would mostly describe me very caring and generous, funny, very cultured. I am definitely a person that loves to travel and loves to discover new places. I'm very friendly, which can get me in a lot of trouble, but I really feel connected to people. I love listening to people's stories and finding out who they are. I've just been fascinated with human nature since I was really young. I was a fashion model, worked internationally, and have been an entrepreneur for most of my life. Started speaking out and working with women and women empowerment over the last few years. And it's something that I really enjoy, where I feel like my heart feel centered and where I feel like I've had a purpose. There's so many different walks of life and everyone does have their own unique story. I've got an older brother, younger sister. I'm a middle child. My dad was in the Air Force and we traveled and moved like every 2 or 3, 4 years of my life. So we bounced around a lot. I lived in England when I was young and then we moved back to the States. It was not fun because I would get into the groove of living in a certain environment and had my friends and the sports. My mother would tell me, oh, your dad got his orders and we're moving to Belgium or we're moving to Idaho or wherever it was. It was always a big, huge, abrupt change. And so I would have to like hug my friends goodbye. That wasn't really in the time of Facebook. Once I said goodbye, it was bye. It didn't really sit well with me as a child. I didn't enjoy it moving around so much. But I do believe it shaped me a lot as an adult. it shaped me being able to adapt to different people in different settings. I can basically hang around any group of people and feel comfortable. That was the upside of it. I definitely think I was always a bit of a ham and always wanting to perform. I did gymnastics and I was a cheerleader and I just did all those extroverted stuff. I was fascinated with the modeling and fashion world and being an actress one day. So I really set my sights pretty young to try to be in that business any which way I could. My parents were pretty supportive of it. They started submitting my pictures to magazine contests, and the two big magazines of the time were like YM and Seventeen. I was chosen for those contests and flew to New York at 16 years old. Gosh, it was amazing. I just loved it. I think it started giving me confidence. And then my family moved to Europe and I worked as a model in Europe for a while I was in high school. I think that was a really great experience. Then if I had just stayed in American high school, it was a NATO high school. So it was an international school. That part was wonderful, just being around all different types of cultures. The European lifestyle is very different from the States because you were able to drink at 16. So nobody really cares about going out and drinking. I felt like friendships were more important and we would just like take off in the car and go, because each country is so close, like go to Germany or go to Luxembourg or go to France or sometimes Holland, go to different countries just to go out at night, go to like a discotheque. I started working with an agency in Brussels and started doing jobs like in Amsterdam or going to London. So that was actually really interesting to be able to do that. I think when you grow up and you do travel a bit, especially in Europe, I think that you mature a little quicker. So I always felt like I was a lot more mature than a lot of my peers. I graduated high school there. I did move from Belgium to Miami Beach. And this is like the late 90s and the heyday of all the model agencies and all the celebrities and all the movies were there. I was just thrown right into that world. And I was with a very good model agency and I started working right away. I was auditioning for movies. I had like a small part in Any Given Sunday, the Oliver Stone film. I started doing tons of TV commercials. And so I was just really busy. And I think I really felt like I was living the life. That was what I really wanted, to be just absorbed in this modeling business and building my acting career. I traveled a bit from there. I went to South Africa for 3 or 4 months and I moved to Greece for a few months. I worked in Los Angeles for a while and then I settled in New York. I was with a great agency, started booking some really good work and being consistent and really enjoying my life there. I loved going out and meeting people and networking. I started taking acting classes at NYU. And then I had booked a job for a British magazine. And I flew to Tortola. One of the girls that I was there with, she asked me if I wanted to meet one of her friends because we had the day off. We got in a boat and we headed over to Jeffrey Epstein's island. I knew nothing about him. The other young model that I was there with, she was Polish, blonde, beautiful, tall, gorgeous girl, who was just like, oh, I have a friend who lives on this island close by. I just trusted her and I just went with her. We got to the island and it was very beautiful. We were playing in the ocean for a little while. There was like a trampoline in the ocean and we went to the pool. I noticed in the pool there was like an older man with a younger girl. There was 2 younger blonde girls that we hung out with for a little while. We had just a normal day and then went back to the bedroom area, the quarters where we were staying, and got ready for dinner. Got dressed, looked all cute, and we were feeling good. And the other blonde girl from the photo shoot and the 2 other young blonde girls were there with me and we were having a good time eating some delicious food. And that's when I met Jeffrey Epstein. He walked up and he said, hello. He gave me a kiss on my cheek and he sat down next to me. From there, we just had some really good conversation. He was very much glued to me and asking many, many questions about me and my life, where I grew up and my ambition. I felt like I really clicked with this older man. I thought, wow, this is really interesting that he's so interested in me. He didn't ask the other girls too much questions. He already knew them. So I was like the new girl there. Obviously, in hindsight, I can see why he did. I've learned that he was grooming me for those hours at dinner. He was asking questions in a way to be like, okay, this is what this girl needs. So many personal questions that nobody ever asks you or cares to ask you. Then I just thought, oh, this is some really interesting, charming man. I had never met an older man before that paid that much attention to me or that was interested in me in more of a mentoring way, not in a sleazy way. No innuendos of like anything that would be more than a mentorship type of relationship. I didn't really have that type of relationship with my dad. My dad was an amazing dad. He was great for so many things, but the affectionate part was never there, or that part where it's like, I love you, I'm proud of you. I never had that. So I think I always felt like I'm not worthy of his love and attention. And I had felt that way about myself in the presence of a lot of men. I'm 5'8 and a half. I was this height since 13 or 14. I was always pretty. So like I would always see men around me and how they would react to me. I always felt like I was an object. Like, oh, they're not really here to love me and take care of me and have this real relationship that I always wanted. Because of my childhood, I really gravitate towards men that are like that, have a little more of a fatherly mentor feeling to me. I remember feeling really comfortable with him. And at one point, I told him that I grew up my first few years in England. And he said, oh, do you want to meet a prince? And I was like, yes. At that moment, the older man that was in the pool walked up and I said hello to him. He was just brief and he walked away, but he was a prince. So that was kind of like interesting. Wow, this guy knows a prince. And then all the girls spoke really highly of him. I mean, if it had ended there, I would have thought this man is like a brilliant, awesome man, but it didn't end there. After dinner was over, I went with the other girl to our room and we got ready for bed. We were just hanging out together and talking. And then there was a knock at the door. The woman at the door, she said that Jeffrey was ready for his massage. I just remember thinking, what the heck is going on here? Like, what massage? And I was like, okay, if you're going to go do a massage, go do a massage. But I'm not doing a massage. I went back and forth with the girl. And she was just kind of like, no, you have to do a massage. And I'm like, what are you talking about? Have to. She was just like, well, Jeffrey likes massages. I didn't understand what was going on. I had no clue how to do a massage. And I just knew I had to put my hands on this man that I just met. But then I thought he was a nice guy. He's probably just some old guy who wants a massage. Fine. It seems pretty clean. And I just felt like I had to go with her. Plus, I'm on this island, his island. I just felt like, okay, this is what I have to do. So I went with her into his bedroom area. And from there, it definitely was a real massage. But then after massaging him for a while with her, it turned into a lot more touching and it just escalated from there. I ended up running out of there with her after like everything was done and just being really freaked out. I just didn't understand how everything went from just like a beautiful day on an island and living my best life. And all of a sudden, here I am in this weird massage situation with a girl who was telling me that we had to do it. It just was a really odd situation that I never really understood what the heck was going on. And then we went back to the room. She really didn't say anything to me and we kind of didn't speak about it. I just stayed up all night just staring at the ceiling. As soon as the day broke, I was just like, let's get out of here. We just got on the boat and we just left. And I remember like seeing this woman months after and she never really said anything. And I just wanted to be like, well, what's going on? But you feel so like dirty and ashamed. And I was really confused because that man seemed like such a good man.
The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals, whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation. Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
I've gotten used to talking about it this year, so it's a little easier for me. In the beginning, it was very hard for me to come to terms with the whole story because I had a lot of shame around it and I didn't really know what was my part. I kind of blamed myself. Well, maybe it's something I did. Maybe I was too friendly at dinner. And you start thinking, what did I do that was wrong? Maybe I should just never went over there. I had a really hard time coming to terms with what happened on the island. Obviously, we all know now what happens on those islands. And we know about Jeffrey and what he did to hundreds of women. But I didn't know that then. I thought I was one of the only ones, or probably that was an isolated incident. So I went back to New York and just tried to go on with my life. I didn't think about what happened to me. I just suppressed it and didn't want to go there. I started like partying and hanging out, and I would try drugs. I would drink alcohol. I had never had something like that ever happened to me. I felt like a different person after that. I felt like my body was a little tainted. And those feelings of not being loved, or I was not worthy of love, crept in and stayed with me for a long time. Even though I was confident and had this amazing career, part of me didn't feel like I was worthy. I never planned on seeing this man again. I hated him. But the secretaries that worked in his office called me relentlessly. They were constantly saying Jeffrey wanted to see me again, but I just didn't want to see him because I just was scared to death of why he wanted to see me. Was he going to do that to me again? I didn't have anything to do with him for quite a few months. And then Jeffrey called me one day and he said, I remember what you told me on the island, that you wanted to be a Ford model. And I was like, yeah. And he's like, well, I'm good friends with Katie Ford. And I was like, oh, wow, really? And he's like, yeah. Would you like to meet her? And I was like, yes, of course. So he got me. He knew exactly what to do. He was so smart, this man. I mean, a lot of people say that's how he got to where he was. His mind worked very differently, and he was a master manipulator. And so I was like, oh, wow. So maybe he feels bad about what he did on the island, or maybe he actually did like me. Maybe it's not so bad. And when I would hear Jeffrey's name among other models or actresses, everyone always talked very highly of him. So he didn't have a bad reputation at all. I was like, okay, maybe he's a decent guy. Maybe that was just a one-off thing. He ended up sending me to go meet with Katie Ford at Ford Models. That's a huge, big deal. They're with the biggest, best agency at the time. I went to go meet her and she said, oh, I love Jeffrey. And I was like, yeah. It just made me feel comfortable that she loved Jeffrey. Like maybe he's not a bad guy. She signed me up. I became a Ford model, which was a step up to the agency where I was with before. That's how he got me. A lot of people will say, oh, you went back. Why did you go back? Well, that's why. It's because he knew how to get me back in his orbit. And in hindsight, I could have kept working as a model and I probably would have been signed to the Ford model agency eventually anyway. But a lot of predators prey on very ambitious women. So that's the thing with ambition. You want something so bad. Like you want to be an actress, you want to be a model, you want to be a doctor, whatever it is. It's like the person knows what you want and that they can help you to get there. Did I have to take that phone call? Did I have to go meet with Katie Ford? No, in hindsight, I probably didn't have to do it. People do not understand a predator like that. They know what they're doing when they're manipulating you in a way to get what they want. They know what it is that's going to get you to do what they want. And they have patience. He has a bigger idea of what he wants me to do or me to be a part of. He would call me up to go meet with people, acting agencies or directors and things like that. I wondered why they were all trying to sleep with me. But I kept thinking, oh, it's probably me. Here I am here. I'm the object again. This happens to me. I could see why he was introducing me to them. But towards the end, he was calling me to like meet with back then. I was like, why? He got annoyed with me towards the end because I wasn't doing what he wanted me to do. So I didn't fit into his orbit anymore when I started pushing back and saying no. I really do believe the reason why Jeffrey tried so hard to keep me in his orbit was because I saw the prince on the island. That's a really big thing to see someone like that and know that kind of information. So I really do feel like he wanted me to be closer to him or have me trust him in some way that I wouldn't spill the beans. My relationship ended with Jeffrey when one of my dearest, closest friends at that time also knew Jeffrey. She worked like an art gallery. He got her that job. I don't really know what the relationship was, but I do know that he had forced her to go into a room to have sex with the prince. He'd been around, and that was almost a 4-year difference from when I first saw him till my friend was made to go into the room with the prince. And so she went into the room and had sex with this older man. She didn't want to do it. It was a turning point for her. After that, she was like, "You don't know who Jeffrey is." So we started just trying to talk to other girls. "What is he making you do? Who did you meet through him?" So we kind of started talking a little bit, nothing like we talk now. And my friends were saying things weren't adding up and they were being forced to do things, but we wouldn't really talk about it, or we wouldn't know to say, "Oh, that's abuse." We just didn't really think like that, but he just wasn't the only abuser. There's like hundreds of other men involved. It wasn't until Jeffrey died in 2019 and I had this crazy reaction to it. It was almost like a family member had died. It was like hyperventilating and was like in shock. I kept thinking like, why am I having this reaction? Because I'd never had anyone close to me die. It really bothered me. So I was like, I need answers here. So I started reaching out to the survivors and talking to them, all my friends during that time, and what their experiences were. And the more that we talked and got deeper and deeper, it was like, this is crazy. Sex trafficking ring emerged that we didn't even know really what was going on. And all the secrets were coming out.
A billionaire financier is in custody, accused of trafficking girls in Florida and New York for sex. Jeffrey Epstein, already a convicted sex offender, was arrested at New Jersey's Teterboro Airport after returning on a flight from France. And while the exact charges are under seal, it is a disturbing new chapter for a high-profile suspect accused of being a predator.
In 2007, Epstein faced potential federal indictment for running a scheme to recruit underage girls to his home for lewd massages and, in some cases, sex. The Florida power broker struck a plea deal, serving just 13 months in county jail. The agreement also halted a federal grand jury investigation and gave Epstein and any potential co-conspirators immunity from federal charges in Florida.
Some breaking news right now. Disgraced financier Jeffrey Epstein has taken his own life while he was behind bars here in New York City.
At 6:39 this morning, the fire department and EMS here in New York City got a phone call from a federal detention facility here in Manhattan in New York City, where Jeffrey Epstein was being held awaiting trial. They took him to New York's downtown hospital. What we know from officials that have been briefed on what happened, it appeared that he had hung himself wherever he was being held within MCC.
We were able to get our hands on at least part of the 4,000-page document, which outlines Epstein's final moments behind bars. According to the Associated Press,
the disgraced financier was under psychological observation at the time for a suicide attempt a few days in, which left his neck bruised and scraped, according to reports. The newly released documents reveal Epstein insisted he wasn't suicidal and told a jail therapist he had a wonderful life, but on August 10, 2019, Epstein was found dead.
I really didn't know during those years what he was really doing. None of us did. It was so hush-hush. Jeffrey Epstein has a very deep sex trafficking ring. He meets tons of girls and he can see who he can manipulate, who he can take under his wing. And I always believe it's to see if you're going to be willing to meet other people, who he can eventually traffic you to. It's not just for him. He had a huge sexual appetite. I know he was seeing like 5 to 8 young girls a day coming in for massages or whatever it was. But he was also taking these girls and sending them out to other men, politicians, actors, directors, producers, and then whatever it was that the girl was interested in, whether you wanted to be an actress or you wanted to have a career working at a magazine. I don't know. He knew everybody. There were so many people that were involved in this ring. When you're a young girl, you don't really know that. If I'm telling him I want to be an actress and he's like, oh, I know so-and-so in Hollywood, they're casting a movie right now. Let me send you to go meet with him. Or it would be good if you meet this guy. And you're thinking, oh, wow, he cares about me. He wants me to meet this person and introduce me like normal people do. They introduce you to people they know. I was interested in the movie business. I had no idea that's trafficking because he put me on an airplane to go meet a director in Hollywood. I had no idea I was being trafficked, but I wondered why they were all trying to sleep with me. I didn't realize that it was 40, 50, 60 or more women were sent to the same guy. And I didn't find that out until just a couple of years ago. Most of the women didn't even know if they were being sent to anybody that it was for sex or the hope of that. With me, I didn't know, but there were some situations, like with some of my friends, that Jeffrey outright said, you know, you're going to go into that room and have sex with him. And I started realizing what my role was and what happened to me. As I started speaking out in court depositions and in private with my attorneys, I never told that part of my story in public. It was just through the court proceedings. I never stepped into this as like, I'm going to get payback. It was more just like, oh, I'm just trying to help the case out and support the other survivors. The Victims Fund came about right after he died. I didn't like that because that was the first time that I had to sit down with a group of women and tell my story. I couldn't even do it. It didn't feel good to me telling my story. I hadn't really told it before. And I just felt judged. It didn't feel like a good process. I think they ran out of money. I didn't get anything from that one. Then we ended up going with a civil case with my attorneys to New York. I went in front of a judge and had to tell my story to her. And I was called in for a deposition. That was excruciating. Two of the survivors were fighting each other in court. I don't even know how it came to that, but I knew both of them. One was the young woman that I saw on the island the first time I was there, and another one was a young girl whose life kind of spiraled out of control after knowing Jeffrey. They deposed me for that trial, and J.P. Morgan came next. So it was like something every year. J.P. Morgan paid out a large settlement to survivors. Through that, we found the emails of women, owners of model agencies, men too, of course, but were also sending young girls to Jeffrey. So it was infuriating for me. Being trafficked, I didn't even use that term or even think I was trafficked at all. That was what my attorneys came, like, you're telling me this story a few times in court. Do you know that that's trafficking? And I was like, no. So things came out as I was talking about it. And the more I talked about it, the more things came up.
The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals, whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation. Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Through the fund with J.P. Morgan, I met Simone, who was a woman who was just this really warm woman. It was like one of the first times I ever told someone really what happened. She had said to me, you should speak out about this. Like, you have a powerful story. And she was like, a lot of women came forward. And she was like, your stories are all so similar. It took me a couple of years to start speaking about my story. I didn't want to confront the shame surrounding it. It's really hard. And I see why a lot of people don't want to talk about their stories. They're not ready to. And I understand why. And I understand why some of them will never. Sometimes it's just safer. But I feel like that manifests in so many different ways inside our bodies, mentally, physically, with our spiritual self. I feel like it's not good to keep all that in. And that's what healed me, was talking to other survivors, because I didn't have family to lean on. I just didn't have that support system at all. And my boyfriend at the time, I felt ready to tell him about it because I had spoke out in a documentary, but he never asked me anything about it. He never sat me down and said, oh, tell me, like, are you okay? And then one day I was just like, I want to tell you about it. And he just put his hand in my face and said, I don't want to hear about it. It was one of the most heartbreaking moments of my life. It was hard for me to deal with all that, but I was ready. I was like, I don't want to hold back anymore. I just wanted the whole truth to come out. I want to discover the truth. I want to talk more with survivors. I wanted community and I wanted support. And I didn't want to be with anyone unless they were supporting me in this and wanted to know the real me, because I didn't want to have shame around it anymore. I wanted to own it. And I didn't like the whole process. I hated it. But I think because of it, I have told my story. I have a way better understanding of it now. Meeting other women who have had the same stories. Now I'm getting to the place where, like, oh, okay, now I understand why I had that reaction when he died. Because it wasn't about him dying. It was about me meeting this person through him and this abuse that also happened. It's putting it all together, because it's not just about Jeffrey Epstein. The media part of it is my least favorite part of it. I'll tell you that. The interviews, sometimes the interviews, they're not sensitive. And some of the questions they ask, I get triggered easily. I feel like they just bring out the salaciousness of everything and they spin it to make it sound more sensationalized and like, oh, Lisa wanted to be a famous model. I never said I wanted to be a famous model. It would start making me kind of upset when the articles would come out. So I kind of stopped doing some of those bigger media outlets because I was seeing that they weren't writing the story the way I told them. So I didn't particularly like that. There was another article that came, it was Fox News. There was like 700 comments. And I didn't go through all of them. I had a friend that looked through a lot of them and was just like, wow. They spun the article so negatively, I feel like, that I was always at the island and going back and forth to the island. And no, I was on a photo shoot in the Caribbean and ended up on the island. I wasn't planning on going there. I didn't like want to go there. And I definitely didn't go back. With the media, I was like, I just can't do this anymore with them. I think from now on, I'm just going to focus on my advocacy and the things that I'm doing now and podcasts like this, telling the story. I feel like I have more control. So with all that, I was just like, someone's got to create a podcast about this and we've got to get to the truth. And I was trying to get everybody else to do it, but me, but everyone kept saying, no, Lisa, you have to do it. And I'm like, I can't, I'm not there yet. I just can't. This is too hard for me. And then one day, EMDR therapy is what did it for me. Going through the JP Morgan settlement, all the survivors were given therapy for 3 years. And I did. I started going through EMDR therapy with a wonderful therapist 1 to 2 times a week. And it changed my life. I have literally a completely different chemical makeup. I'm starting to learn boundaries. I don't have people in my life that aren't supportive or good for me anymore. And I got the courage. Oh, I just want to cry, but I got the courage to do a podcast. I have this safe space for survivor to survivor. We talk about our healing journey and we talk about red flags and what to look out for. We educate and we empower. To have a space where survivors feel safe to tell their stories and not make it about these predators, these disgusting predators in arts, entertainment, and sports. There's many predators in all walks of life, but I focus on the arts, entertainment, and sports for the most part because it's so prevalent in this arena. I tell bits and pieces of my story throughout the season. And the first season is about 20 episodes. I tell from the beginning, all the ugly in between, and how the story ends with Jeffrey Epstein. So I go through this whole arc and then I formulate that to the guest and their experience. So we do have a lot of survivors from serial predators in Hollywood, arts, entertainment, sports. But we've had some domestic violence and some stalking that aren't related to that. And a lot of authors, women making change in legislature, doing advocacy work. So it's quite an array of guests. It's actually been quite difficult for me because I'm still going on my healing journey through this. And a lot of my guests are too. But since I started the podcast, I've been speaking out a lot more and I'm more comfortable with it because I just keep it about what I'm doing to help others and the empowerment. I speak about that more so than, ooh, tell me the juicy story and then flip it on me. My podcast is on Spotify, Apple, or anywhere where you listen, and also on YouTube, From Now On Pod. We release an episode every Thursday. One of my favorites is I had a girl on. She's a dancer in Hollywood. Her name is Errol Lindsay, and she went viral on TikTok speaking out about her abuser. My episode went live. There were two sisters that came forward who were abused by the same man. They like had no idea. And then there was another girl that went live on TikTok, and she was telling her story about being abused by a rapper. So I reached out to her to see if she wanted to be on the podcast to talk about things. This just happened last year, so it was a little fresh for her too. All four of these are young girls. But when she looked into my podcast, she was like, no way. I was abused by the same man as those three women. And she kind of had not processed it because she didn't really know what happened. She had spent time with this man a few times, and each time she woke up and she just thought she drank too much. And she thought maybe he had abused her, but she didn't know until she found out this is what this man was doing to the other girls that were on my podcast. She was going to talk about some other guy, but it was this eye-opening moment where she broke down and was like, this is what happened to me.
The beauty is that you created the threads with your own story, but then an invisible thread wove itself between other stories. That is pretty incredible. And to me, that's a sign of you are on this path for a reason and you're on the right path.
I'm starting to feel that. Yes. It's been very, very healing for me to go through this process. It hasn't been easy. It's a lot harder than I thought it was going to be. I'll tell you that. It's very triggering. It's very traumatizing, some of these stories. I've talked to hundreds of survivors at this point, and it's scary how our stories are so similar. A lot of these serial predators like Weinstein and Epstein and Larry Nassar and Cosby, they all have this MO that they do. They all operate in the same kind of way of masterfully manipulating and grooming. They're very calculated in their grooming to get you to know, like, and trust them so much so that they're doing some bad to you, but lots and lots of good. That's why it's confusing and people don't understand, like, why did you go back? I would never put up with that. What were you wearing? People say all these horrible things. It has nothing to do with that. When someone has targeted you, is preying on you to get something from you, whether it's for their own sexual satisfaction or it's for others, their friends, because a lot of times they all hang out together, they pass you along and you have no idea. Also, because I'm a model agent and I see it happening today, really, it's scandalous how bad it's happening in the music industry and the acting world still. People are taking advantage of their positions of power and they're abusing so many young women and men. They're even having them sign NDAs before the abuse even happens. I would just say believe survivors. They need support and just be a listening ear. I know it can make you uncomfortable hearing this kind of stuff, but if you just listen, that's all survivors really need is someone to listen and be there for them and have that support. My socials are From Now On Pod on Instagram. And my personal Instagram is I Am Lisa Phillips.
Thank you so much for everything you're doing for other victims of your same abusers, for people that have been abused by other people, for general society as well.
Oh, thank you so much. I really appreciate that, Amy. That was a wonderful conversation.
Breaking news, a Palm Beach County judge has finally unsealed the grand jury transcripts detailing what happened 17 years ago when Jeffrey Epstein was indicted on only a single prostitution charge. Grand jury documents are sealed, not accessible to the public. The courts do that to protect the witnesses and the victims.
The facts contained in these documents have been kept secret since 2008.
Attorney Todd Foster says it's very rare for grand jury testimony to be released to the public. Foster, a former federal prosecutor, says a new law that allowed the documents to be released will likely only ever be used in the Epstein case. But the documents also show how prosecutors attacked the victims, pointing out how they accepted money for the encounters, used drugs, and drank beer.
An attorney representing Epstein victims told West Palm Beach Station WPBF it's reprehensible how the victims were treated, saying that the state attorney was afraid to prosecute him and that they tanked their own case by attacking their own witnesses during the grand jury proceeding.
It's extremely important to highlight, although there are allegedly over 100 reported survivors, That number only touches on those who have reported their abuse to a related organization. It's believed that many victims have not officially reported their abuse. Although Jeffrey Epstein became a convicted sex offender in Florida in 2007, the deal he struck with prosecution allowed him to largely avoid major consequences aside from a 13-month jail sentence. Then, in July of 2019, the state of New York charged him with sex trafficking of minors and conspiracy to commit sex trafficking of minors. However, within 5 months of his 2019 arrest, Epstein would be found dead in his jail cell. Almost exactly 1 year to the date of Epstein's arrest, his associate, Ghislaine Maxwell, would also be charged with enticing a minor to travel to engage in criminal sexual activity, transporting a minor with the intent to engage in criminal sexual activity, conspiracy to commit both of those offenses, and perjury in connection with a sworn deposition. As the United States Attorney's Office of the Southern District of New York states, knowing that Epstein had a preference for young girls, Maxwell played a critical role in the grooming and abuse of minor victims that took place in locations that include New York, Florida, and New Mexico. The indictment alleges that between at least in or about 1994 through 1997, Maxwell and co-conspirator Jeffrey Epstein exploited girls as young as the age of 14. Maxwell was found guilty on December 29th, 2021, following a one-month jury trial. And on June 28th, 2022, Maxwell was sentenced to 20 years in prison. According to Inside Edition, in addition to victim restitution, Epstein's estate also agreed to pay a financial penalty for the late pedophile's alleged environmental violations while developing one of his two islands, and half the proceeds from the sale of his other island. As of September 30th, 2023, the estate claims to have a total of $91,677,103.46 left in assets. As Inside Edition goes on to highlight, the Epstein estate still has a handful of court cases to wrap up before it can close. There is also an ongoing case that involves Ghislaine Maxwell, who is suing to have Epstein's estate cover her legal bills. In November of 2023, the financial institution J.P. Morgan reached a settlement with a group of over 100 of Epstein's victims. U.S. District Judge Jed Rakoff approved the $290 million settlement because, as a Reuters article states, quote, "The largest U.S. bank turned a blind eye to the late financier's sex trafficking. J.P. Morgan ignored internal warnings and overlooked red flags about Epstein because he had been a valuable client."
Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. Next week on What Came Next.
We had driven down to Fort Lauderdale and we went on the boat. I'm on the boat with my family and they send me a picture of my license plate with my car in the parking lot. Another time I was getting in my car and he's on the phone with me and he's like, "So what'd you get to drink?" And I'm like, "What do you mean, what did I get to drink? How would you know that?" And he's like, "Oh, I was in line behind you." I was like, "No, you weren't. There's no way you were behind me." I ended up having to go to my boss and say, "Hey, this is the situation. This is what's happening. I don't know what to do." I ended up calling the cops at this point because it was just nonstop.
What Came Next is a Broken Cycle Media production co-produced by Amy B. Chesler and Tiffany Reese. If you'd like to help support What Came Next, you can leave us a positive review, support our sponsors, or follow Broken Cycle Media on Instagram at Broken Cycle Media. Check out the episode notes for sources, resources, and to follow our guests. Thank you again for listening.